What is the condition humanity finds themselves in that they need saving? Whatever it is, Paul says in Romans chapter 1, verses 16 through 17, that it is going to require the power of God, meaning God is going to have to come through on our behalf big time. For I am not ashamed of the power of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew and also the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. If the power of God for salvation was just a ticket to heaven, Paul could probably accomplish explaining that in a chapter or two. Yet he's going to spend 16 chapters unpacking what it means, the power of God for salvation. Is there a way we can boil it down just a little to help us understand this picture? I think so. Take a moment and read Romans chapter 1, verses 16 through 25. Now, having read that, you note that the first entry point in this section talks about the wrath of God. The wrath of God, like the word salvation, is much more of a dynamic term than we often give it credit. We have a tendency to think of the wrath of God in terms of going to hell or fire and brimstone from heaven. Now, those things count for sure, but there's something happening today in which we see the wrath of God. The wrath of God is a present tense reality. In these verses, we see the reason for God's wrath in our present reality. Imagine somebody came into your home as a guest, and before long they started acting like they owned the place and abusing not only you, but your family. Now imagine the same thing happening in your neighborhood, your city, your state, your country, and in the world at large. Terrorists, if you would. That's essentially what we have done. The word ungodly means lack of reverence, and unrighteousness means injustice towards others. We have mocked God's divine nature and essentially made ourselves terrorists against His holy created order. Pause once again and read Romans chapter 1, verses 26 through the rest of the chapter. There are present tense consequences for failing to recognize God as God and worshiping Him. The history of mankind is one in which we have rejected God and His right to be God in our lives by creating gods of our own making. The key issue, or the key problem, in which God's power needs to intervene is that of a worship disorder. Notice God's response to our worship disorder is not an active outpouring, but rather a removal of strength, restraint, where we essentially reap the fruit of our rebellion. Like a judge turning a prisoner over to his punishment, God has turned us over to things such as degrading sex. Degrading sex is not permitted by a holy God. It is, in fact, punishment for failure to worship a holy God. But before we get hung up on degrading sex, we better first take a look at ourselves. In this passage, evidence for God turning a society or a people over to degrading passions is seen not only in sex, but also in disobedience to parents and gossip. Evidence that we ourselves had said of God, to truly acknowledge Him is really not worth our time, is seen in our greed, our arrogance, and our quarrels. In our failure to recognize God as God and worship Him rightly, God has turned us over to a depraved mind or a corrupt mind, meaning we don't have the wisdom needed for life. And the final stage for human devolution is seen in verse 32, where we're applauding or celebrating this rejection of God. God has turned us over to our desire to be something that is essentially less than human. It is a dehumanization that is unfolding within humanity because we have rejected our Creator. What is the condition humanity finds themselves in that they are needing saving? It is a worship disorder. And we don't have the power within ourselves to turn this thing around. It requires the power of the gospel. A pastor friend of mine says we will not rightly honor God without the gospel. And he's right. We have positioned ourselves as terrorists against God's holy created order and have mocked his right to be God in our lives. Those who have done such a thing, says Paul, deserve to die. The good news of the gospel is we know one who died a death he didn't deserve, a death he died on our behalf. In that sense, the demand for justice has been satisfied. The believer is acquitted or righteous of all his acts of treason, past, present, and future. On what basis, we might ask? Has God just decided to overlook or excuse our treachery? Absolutely not. It's on the basis that Jesus took our punishment. Within this good news, there is the power of God for salvation, a dynamic power to turn a terrorist into a worshiper. Paul knew the power of God experientially, in that functionally he did act as a terrorist. Before his conversion, Paul was responsible for the death of many Christians. The writer of this book of Romans and the writer of much of the New Testament was, in fact, a terrorist turned into a worshiper. Paul was unapologetic about God's good news of salvation made available to us in Jesus. This terrorist turned worshiper was eventually martyred for his faith. Where does such a changed life come from? Paul answers that for us in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, where he says, "I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." Let's take Paul's words to heart and look to the power of God to save us from the dehumanizing nature of a worship disorder.